outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've...
Welcome to the B-side. It's frosty outside. And this is podcast number 9, I think. Mm-hmm. I think we're 9. December 9th. 9 on December 9th.
I like that dance you did there.
Do you? It's a good thing it's not a video cast.
Yeah.
Well, it felt like we need to be like tap dancing or something to that intro. But intro is appropriate because it's snowing outside.
It's snowing.
The weather outside is frightful, and the space heater under Steve's desk.
It's delightful.
Yeah, Steve feels that that is delightful. He's been freezing in his office switch, and so we like a happy Steve, so we got him a space heater when we ordered our supplies. And now he is very happy.
Happy, happy.
Happy, happy. Except now that you're up here, we're all bundled up to do our podcast upstairs.
And we have a new administrator who makes coffee.
What?
For me.
What?
What?
It's just her first week, give her time. She didn't realize that you were the coffee boy. She's ruined everything now. Inga! Because I wasn't here to tell her different. Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm very happy for you. Space heater and somebody who made you coffee.
It's a good day.
It was good. It was good. Well, yeah. So we're into Advent. We've had the second Advent Sunday already. And the weather is frightful. Well, mm-hmm. Actually, I like it when it snows in moderation. Mm-hmm. But... So Advent on Sunday was Jesus is King, and I just want to tell you that I really enjoyed that sermon. I know, now he's just blushing, and normally I would say it's like awkward pause, he's like, thanks. No, but I really did, because, you know, I never know how you come up with actually 4 sermons in a row on, well, actually, I never know how really you come up with all your sermons. It always seems like an incredibly daunting task to me, but I really enjoyed it. I felt like... I don't know. The thing that I walked away from that was really about how we make Jesus cute and people are okay. Like when you went to the train, the Stanley Park trains, and there is like, you know, the reindeer and then Frosty the Snowman and the Nativity in the middle with a light show, and like people are okay with baby Jesus as long as he's the humble baby Jesus and he's cute, then everybody loves him. But we're okay with that Jesus, but we're not okay with King Jesus. We're not okay with when he's not all humble and cute.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. Like, I know that, but I guess I just hadn't put the pictures together at Christmas, and I really actually found that really refreshing. Hmm. And not to take away from joy of Christmas or to be like a bah humbug about it, but I don't know. I just felt like if you really think about the first Christmas and how not cute and cozy it was, from stable all the way to the shepherds on the hillside, minding their own business and having a host of angels, which would have been really freaky. Mm-hmm. But that would have been so, like, you would have just been in awe, right? Like, it just puts this new magnitude, like, not to take away celebration and joy for Christmas, but to kind of take it from a, just a frou-frou level to something totally different. So, I don't know. I enjoyed that.
I think last year it was when we were discussing, like, should we do a set for Christmas? What should be the feel? I think it was last year. We talked about, okay, Christmas, the birth of Christ was not pretty. It wasn't elegant. You know, it didn't have beautiful white Christmas lights. Like, it wasn't, all that we celebrate is elegant and beautiful and dressed up, and you get a haircut at Christmas and you buy a new suit, or you get a new dress, and you go to fancy parties, and it's really quite elegant and kind of, you know.
And those things culture. In themselves are not great. Like bad things.
No, those are great. It's great. A lot of fun, and there's the positives. But we were thinking as staff about the contrast between Christmas, how we commonly celebrate it, beautiful white Christmas lights, and the tree decorated just right, and everything is kind of beautified, versus the stable and straw. And cow poo, and the smell, and what shepherds, and we said we should decorate the foyer beautifully, and then make the sanctuary a dump, like this stable.
People who would not be able to
make it like stable, like you know, just it's a mess. It kind of stinks. It's ugly. It's raw. It's real. And sort of the contrast between Christmas as we celebrate it and the actual event of the birth of Christ, and how just non-beautiful. I mean, it's the Christmas story is beautiful in its contrasts, right?
Yeah.
That's what it's these tensions and contrasts which make it so profound, is the Creator God in such finite, in such a weak state that he can, you know, can't feed himself. He who, you know, created life is dependent on his mother, and the contrast of king, the sovereign God, king and ruler of all things, in a manger. And these are the contrasts which make it, you know, it's not announced to important people. It's announced to shepherds, and it's not in a palace. It's in a stable. And these are the things that make it so profound and fascinating. And so we thought about actually doing this, you know, beautiful foyer in the ugly sanctuary to help that. And then we vetoed that idea. I think it was
how could you get the smell out of January?
I thought that maybe the cleaners wouldn't like cow poo on the stage. Not. We thought it'd be a great metaphor, but like a horrible environment. Like people would be like, this is horrible, I'm coming back in January.
Yeah.
We should actually have a podcast segment.
Like, if we did one, what if we did the service not in the sanctuary, though, and you actually did a service out in the field, or like in a stable, in a barn?
We should have a podcast segment of like ideas we didn't do.
So people like, sermon
series we didn't do.
That's not bad. We could save it for next week. Next week we were going to do the best of, but I think it could be anything. Like, it could be like, what were the best ofs that you didn't do?
You don't like the things we do. You should see the failed attempts, the things that hit the cutting room floor. So we did put up lights this year and made it pretty.
Yeah, but we did. Yeah. But it's still making much of Jesus.
Hey, I saw, not that I...
you're hesitating. You're evaluating whether or not to share whatever you're going to say.
Not that we should all go watch Saturday Night Live, but I happened to this weekend, and it was One Direction. Not that I...
True confessions, people, right here on the podcast.
But they were playing.
You watched it just for
I
the One Direction.
I skipped the One Direction part, right? Except I noticed their stage setup. They had all these vintage light bulbs. Really? I was like, hey, they copied our idea.
There you go.
Yeah.
I actually saw that. Where did I see that?
They were on SNL on the weekend.
There was somewhere I saw, like, the lights that you have hanging down.
Yeah.
I saw that somewhere else. I remember thinking about that. But it's gone.
It's
that season. It's gone now. And what is also gone was what I was going to say next. Awesome. This podcast is going to rock. Okay, no, I remember. We're talking about the nativity and the manger and the contrast of that.
Yeah.
So obviously this is pure speculation because people didn't know then. But if you think about what was chosen, what the Lord did choose, and obviously Vancouver is not Bethlehem, and there was a whole prophecy on that, but... if God were to send Jesus to Vancouver today as a baby, I think we don't stop to think about, like, where would he come? Would he come to the biggest, coziest church? Would he go to, what would be our context? And try to compare the context of then to the context of now. Would it be a downtown Eastside baby? You know, like, would the angels have appeared to people sitting around in the park with no home? Or, you know, like, who, the meek and the, like... who was it that he would have brought the news to first?
Yeah.
And what context? What are you being able to relate with?
Those, so you go, shepherds are viewed with great skepticism. Many of them were viewed as criminals somewhere. And it was sort of the job that nobody else did. So it's the very lowest of society. This isn't a culture where you bathe daily. Mm-hmm. So spending all day outside with animals probably doesn't endear you well. And you think Bethlehem's fairly insignificant place besides the prophecy, which is what we associate it with, but the day-to-day people wouldn't have associated it. It's a small town, not very significant. So it's...
But, like, I had to challenge myself because I was looking at the old... I was going to say Old Testament. It's not the Old Testament. It's New Testament. Okay, but I look at the biblical context of that, and I go, like, he came and he was born in a manger, and they appeared to shepherds, and that's awesome. And then I try to think of today, and I'm like, wow, but can I wrap my brain around what that might have looked like today? My king and savior being born in the downtown east side? I'm just saying, for example, but you know, like somewhere or some hick town that, like a truck stop, I don't know, like, you know, just
But nothing good comes from merit.
Yeah, well, like, oh man, those are Freddie words. I actually don't know anyone from merit, but I'm sure. But, yeah.
That's the point. Yeah. Nothing good's come from merit.
So, like, so let's say he was born, like, at a truck stop in merit, right? And so I have to wrap my brain around that's what God might have chosen today, and that's my God and the statement he's trying to make.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, contextualize it for myself. And it blows my mind even more than me thinking about it in a biblical context.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I really like that. What is that video? We played it in our church before. It's a music video with the birth, the story of Jesus, and it's Mary and Joseph at the stable. We played it in church before, and yeah. I put it on my Facebook page because I just love it.
We showed it at Christmas Eve last year, I think.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a, it's
clipped. Is it Come to Worship? Is that?
Yeah, by Bebo Norman.
Yeah, and it's just...
And it's clips from the movie, the Nativity movie.
But they do a really good montage of it, yeah. Like, in that one song. And I just, like, when I watch that, it doesn't make me feel all cute and cozy inside. But it just makes me want to... It makes me teary because it has more that awe factor of thinking about the context of what it might actually have been like.
The film captured some of the... I don't know, it was, like, a spectacular storytelling or whatever. But it did capture some of the raw... nature of the events, I think, well,
mm-hmm.
that movie.
The Nativity.
Yeah, it wasn't all, like, there was definitely kind of glorious moments, but it wasn't all, like, dolled up and pretty and easy.
Mm-hmm.
And off they went to Bethlehem, and, you know, like, it kind of captured some of the agony, mm-hmm. difficulty of it all. She actually appears to be in labor.
Yeah, so, I like that.
Yeah. It was well done.
Enjoying that. The other thing I was reading, like, it was a Christian Book Supply kind of flyer or something like that, and I don't know who wrote the book, and it just, the title caught my eye, but it was something of, it's not your birthday. And that's really been challenging me this week. Like, just not to, like, guilt trip or anything, that's not what I'm trying to do on the podcast right now. It just personally hit me of, like, we celebrate Christmas, like, what are the gifts that I'm going to get? What is all the food I'm going to eat? What are the days I'm going to take off? Like, celebrating, like, it's my birthday, mm-hmm. but it's Jesus's birthday. And so that got me thinking more about, okay, well, if it's someone in my family's birthday, it's not about me getting gifts.
We honor them.
Right? Like, we honor them. And I try to think of ways to give to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of challenged my thinking again in the season of, okay, well, it's not my birthday, and it's not... other my friend's birthdays, it's Jesus's birthday, so how do I best give to him? Because mm-hmm. I give to other people because I want them to know that I care about them.
Mm-hmm.
But really, and it just made me think of the verses when they say, whatever you do for the least of my brothers and sisters, you do also unto me. And I looked up that verse this week. I was just thinking, like, what are ways that we can... really, if we're going to celebrate Jesus' birthday, how do we give gifts unto him?
Mm-hmm.
And how does that look different? But what hit me more, and I wish I could remember, is that a Matthew verse? I want to say Matthew. Might not be. Come on, Steve. Pop
what?
This.
That verse you got? Verse. Matthew 25.
Okay. I was right. It was Matthew. So, yeah. But then a couple of verses down later, two verses later, it says, and whatever you don't do... Can you find it? What does it say? Because I remember the first verse is the one that always gets quoted. The one about the least you do, because it makes us all feel good. Oh, when I do this for other people, I do it for Jesus. And that makes us feel good about ourselves. But then the verse, it might be 45. But the verses that follow shortly after are really convicting. And we often don't quote the second one.
Yeah, I mean, it's the sheep and the goats. Right?
Yeah, so often take it out of context because that one verse makes us feel good about doing good works.
Verse 40, truly I say to you, as you did to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me. And then...
Yeah, he's just finished saying, like, when did we clothe you? When did we feed you? Well, when you did it to these, you did it to me.
Verse 45 is, then he will answer them saying, truly I say to you, as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. And these will go away into eternal punishment, for the righteous into eternal life.
Yeah, that's like... We quote the first one, but we're not comfortable with the second one. And I thought, well, it's kind of similar to the baby Jesus. We made baby Jesus cute, and we're okay with humble baby Jesus. We're okay with things that make us feel good, but we're not okay with things that, like the sovereign Lord, who's come to be king and Lord, we're not okay with that. So, yeah, and I thought, he said, basically, the Lord's saying, like, when you didn't do these things, you were not doing them unto me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I had to check myself and go, huh, how much do I compartmentalize this part of my life? Anyway, just thinking about the baby Jesus, it almost inspired me to, like, pack up, you know, when you have an extreme moment, like, I'm just going to pack up all my Christmas decorations and just fill the house with nativity scenes. That would be interesting in our house. Because my mom, now, just to be clear, my mom believes in Jesus and the risen Son of God. But because she grew up Brethren in Scotland, like, they immigrated from Scotland, and the Brethren movement was really a response, or reactionary response to a lot of the traditions in Catholicism. So, you know, like, if you grew up in the UK in a certain period of time, you're either this or you're that,
yeah,
right? And it's almost like part of your stance is the fact, yeah, that you're not something else. So there's no nativity scenes in my house growing up. Mm-hmm. And that might be shocking to, like, some people here, but there's no nativity scenes because to put them up would be almost wrong. And I know, like, maybe someone would write a question,
yeah,
about that. Well, because it's a graven image, and
it's an image of Christ, yeah.
Yeah, and so it wasn't that they didn't want to celebrate Jesus being the Son of God. It's like,
wasn't
you
the
don't
appropriate way to do that.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, I think my mom is fine. Like, I've had, we don't have pictures of Jesus up in our, like, paintings of Jesus.
Yeah.
We've never had that. But, you know, being Canadian raised, I had storybooks, and, you know, my sister-in-law has beautiful nativity scenes, and my mom, I know, recognizes them for what they are to her. So I don't think she feels anything bad towards that, or when we have a nativity scene. But for my mom herself to put up nativity scenes, if all of a sudden I took all the decorations down in the house and I filled the house with nativity scenes, I don't think she could wrap her brain around that. I think she'd actually feel really convicted about it, which I think is shocking to some people who grew up here. Because, yeah.
Mom listened to the podcast? She gonna write in?
No, she won't write in. She'd go, yeah. I mean, like, one Easter, I was coming to teach the kids, and I had made them, like, Easter Sunday morning, and I'm driving here with my mom, and my mom knows I made a bunch of goodies for the kids, and so her hearing's not as great as it used to be. And so we're driving here in the car, and all of a sudden I turn to her, and I'm like, Mom, when we get there, could you help me out? Because she had offered to help some way. I'm like, could you make, pop upstairs and make me a pitcher of juice? But she didn't hear that. All of a sudden, I go, Mom, could you pop upstairs and make me a pitcher of juice? And she goes, what? You want me to draw a picture of Jesus? And I'm like, no. Like, we could just, like, that's why my mom wouldn't know how to draw a picture of Jesus. She's not really an artist type. But all of a sudden, it was like, you want me to do what? You actually want me to go against this and you want me to draw a picture of Jesus? And no, it was just a picture of juice.
So you got a picture of juice.
Yes, I got
a picture.
I got a real picture of juice. A one full of juice.
A picture of juice?
Yeah. Not a picture of juice either. No.
It's a very confusing statement.
I know.
I'm
it is
confused.
Rather. But yeah. I don't know. It's just interesting because I never think of it that way. Like, I don't think for me nativities, I would be happy putting nativities up in my house. But I think me growing up here and understanding what it represents and not having the same historical cultural background,
yeah,
it doesn't represent the same things to me.
Yeah.
But I understand how my mom could feel that way. And she doesn't hold other people to it because I think she realizes that in itself is not sinful. But for her, because of the context growing up, she still would not feel that it was quite right.
Right.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Moving on.
If you want to write in your nativity ballots or that, feel free to send them in. So, last week, we were talking about the Radical Destroyer read to you from Radical by David Platt about preachers not preaching from the Word, not using the Word as their base for and bringing the Word to the people, but bringing more, like, their opinions.
Yeah.
I don't know how to phrase that right, because I guess, like,
yeah,
but not studying expositorily, but
yeah,
more opinion-based.
The guy that wasn't sure what God had to say.
Yeah. The guy, yeah, and the story was he prayed and prayed and prayed, but nothing came to mind, so God must not have had anything to say.
Yeah, failing to open the Word.
Yeah, and he was challenging that because at all times God has a word for us because he's given us his Word.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about that, and you mentioned Mr. McManus, Ron McManus, in a context of a story.
Yeah.
And that called him out a little bit. So sometimes, we didn't have this happen, but you and I ended up having a discussion about it later, of when sometimes when people make statements of other pastors or preachers or writers and people aren't comfortable with that, then they say, oh, they quote Matthew 18. Mm-hmm. You know, you should really go Matthew 18 and you shouldn't do that. So first of all, maybe you should give the context of what Matthew 18 says, what people are actually...
Yeah.
And so my question is, when is Matthew 18, when does it apply and when does it not apply?
Yeah.
Because you don't want to dismiss Matthew 18 because it is very significant in the life of the church. But mm-hmm. I think people confuse when it is appropriate or when it is applicable.
Yeah, yeah. So Matthew 18, we're talking about Jesus teaching on, I mean, he gives us the foundation for church discipline. But he talks about, this is Matthew 18, verse 15. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you've gained your brother. But if he does not listen, take one or two others along with you, that every charge may be established by the evidence of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile or a tax collector. So the idea is, in church discipline, if someone has offended or caused, has sinned against you, you involve, you work for restoration, but you involve as few people as necessary. So you keep the circle as tight as possible. That's the goal. And so you just go talk to that person.
But not at the cost of, if that person isn't willing to rectify, then it says go, the circle yeah. gets bigger.
Keep the circle as small as you can while accomplishing the goal of restoration. So you don't start with the whole church. Mm-hmm. You just talk to that person. If that doesn't work, if they don't see their sin, you widen it a bit, and you work for restoration. You work for see their repentance, see their growth. And this is so sort of a pre-foundational verse for churches. There's a lot other places we turn for church discipline. I think people often treat Matthew 18 as like the only thing to be said about church discipline or talking to each other. Whenever you get into a, you know, especially on the internet, or maybe a podcast or a sermon, where if I or somebody calls somebody out, right, and criticizes a writer, a theologian, public intellectual, and then they say, well, hey, did you talk to them? I don't know if this is appropriate. Did you talk to them privately? And that's sort of the way Jesus would have us do this. But And it's a pretty common response, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's I, in a sermon, call out Joel Osteen and say, Joel Osteen, you know, and I criticize something you said or criticize his theology, or whether it's I read a blog article criticizing someone's book or critiquing their theology in a certain place or pointing out their error, it's, well, shouldn't you contact them privately? Shouldn't you take that, you know, that would be the biblical way, right? But I think the important thing to get is that in Matthew 18, the context is someone has personally sinned against you. So if I did something against you, Rhoda, you would be compelled to privately take me aside and say, Stephen, you said that. That was hurtful to me. And then we would work on reconciliation because between you and me personally, right? Mm-hmm. That's very different. It's a very different context than someone's public teaching is wrong. So I think what we'd have to do is while we could quote Matthew 18 where personal sin has happened and you try and correct that, bring reconciliation and restoration privately, as private as possible between mm-hmm. the individuals that are concerned. But it's a totally different context than public wrong theology. Mm. So we could also now point out many places where, particularly Paul, points out, calls people by name publicly in his letters, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when is it that Paul does that? Because that happens.
Yeah, he's often naming people. This person, this yeah. person's bickering, yeah. these people are doing this. Or...
So sometimes it's bad theology. 1 Timothy 1:20, he calls out Hymenaeus and Alexander, who have shipwrecked their faith, and he's handing them over to Satan that they may learn not to blaspheme. They have bad theology. Presumably, the assumption is that they were leaders in the church in Ephesus, and that's why Paul has to step in, and he's removed them from the church under his own authority because of their bad theology, and he's happy to publicly out them for the whole church and Timothy to know that these men are dangerous. They've shipwrecked their faith. And so has no hesitation about naming them publicly because they have publicly taught error and will not they're unrepentant, but they're adamant about this error, and Paul calls them out, names them. Or 2 Timothy 2:17, he does the same type of thing. 2 Timothy 4:4, he talks about Alexander the coppersmith who's done him great harm. So he's warning other people about the danger of an individual. And he has no hesitation about naming them so that other people will be warned. Okay, but other than that, in Philippians 4, he calls out these two women, Syntyche and Euodia, who are disagreeing in the church in Philippi, and these seem to be leaders in the church. Like they're well known. They've labored alongside him. It says, this is Philippians 4:2, I entreat Euodia and I entreat Syntyche to agree in the Lord. Yes, I ask you also, true companion, help these women who have labored side by side with me in the gospel, together with Clement and the rest of my fellow workers whose names are in the book of life. So he calls these two women out. They're members of this church, and they have some sort of squabble, which is well known. It's been reported to Paul from prison.
Yeah, so this isn't like these two ladies have a problem only between the two of them and no one else knows about it, or only between them and Paul. It's like the dispute is already public.
It's a public dispute, and he's calling the whole church to step in to help them resolve their public dispute, to bring reconciliation. Mm-hmm. And then I think as well of Galatians 2, Galatians 2, where Peter has removed himself from eating with the Gentiles because the men from James have come. And Paul confronts him to his face publicly because he was wrong. His actions were not in keeping in step with the gospel.
He went backwards because of peer pressure.
Yeah. It was public behavior. Was sending a false message about the gospel and about the salvation or the status of the Gentile Christians. And so Paul calls him out publicly because he was wrong. And Peter, presumably, the historical, it doesn't say in Galatians, but the historical conclusion is that Peter repented. He realized his wrong and changed his behavior. So Matthew 18 applies to personal sin between two people. It should be dealt with quietly, as few people as necessary to bring the reconciliation. There are situations where it seems entirely appropriate to call out someone publicly. And the theme between all these instances we've thought of is there's public teaching, public behavior. These are public figures, well known. These are leaders. These are influential people. People look to them. They are significant individuals as far as their behavior, their actions, their theology is looked upon by others. And they're wrong. And it's dangerous. And Paul has no hesitation to call them out. So
it's a public response to a public statement.
A public response,
not a
public
response to a private matter.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Especially when you're talking. So if Joel Osteen, I would argue that I am not compelled, I'm not required to take Joel Osteen up for coffee before publicly calling him out, as if I have to go through a Matthew 18 process before calling into question his horrid theology. I have every right to call out his public stated, preached and written, published views, and criticizing them and showing their foolishness without having to take him aside. Or I can write a critical review on a blog or something about someone's published book. Mm-hmm. They have put out public views for public response. Yeah. So now, if you said something to me, you said a harsh comment to me and I was hurt, and then I went public with it.
And you blogged
about it, and you became a sermon illustration. That's inappropriate. That's called gossip and slander.
Yeah.
But if a public figure speaks on the record, speaks publicly, writes a book, writes a blog, it's open for criticism or response, right? And we still need to be charitable, kind, and all that. So public teaching is open to public response. Now, should I? And then the follow-up question is, should I?
I love it. You're just going to ask the question.
I know. I see where it's going.
Yeah.
Should I have named names in my funny story About John Morrison and Irwin McMahon.
Was it charitable? That's what we were
I don't know. Maybe it was. Maybe it wasn't. I didn't think it was a big indictment. I just thought it was a funny story. And I appreciate Irwin McManus in many ways. I think he's done
so
a lot.
So you don't equate Irwin McManus with Joel Osteen?
No. Joel Osteen is... I think Joel Osteen is... Honestly, Joel Osteen is, I think, a Galatians 1 sort of situation. This is not the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
This is anathema. I mean, it's... He's teaching a false gospel.
Mm-hmm.
It's dangerous. Irwin McManus, I think, we're not in the same tribe. Like, we don't agree on everything, but he's done a lot of good too. There's some positives. There's some things I would seriously critique.
And he's very very.
Yeah, there's some things I would appreciate about Irwin McManus. Some things I would agree with. There's some things I would critique. There's some things I would state differently than he would. But maybe we're getting at the same thing. But I wouldn't use his wording. So, should I have said that? I didn't think my story was harsh or uncharitable, but maybe it was, and I shouldn't have named names. Maybe if I was going on the record, like, I suppose this is on the record, it's on the internet.
Maybe
you'd be more careful if you're, like, publishing it in a book, as versus just you and me hanging out in a room by ourselves, not sure if anyone's listening. I don't know.
Is anybody listening? Write in a question about this podcast.
So, yeah, especially... when does Matthew 18 apply? It applies when, you know, it's personal
sin. I think
sin.
It was a good discussion that you and I have after that.
You know, like,
we were just chatting about it, and I'm like, I didn't disagree with you on your comment that you made last time. Now everybody's going to go back and listen to that podcast because they don't know what we're talking about. But I didn't disagree with you in the, I guess, reaction to it, but I was surprised that you named him. Which I think you just were telling a story. So you
told
missed
a story,
it, right?
Yeah.
So, but that led to a good conversation because I wasn't thinking you needed to do Matthew 18, but I had noticed people responding to similar situations using Matthew.
Yeah. It's a pretty common response. Way.
And just going, oh, and I get that people are peacemakers and are like, you know, let's not, because they feel like it's tearing down the church.
Yeah.
But I think that actually, now this, you can correct me if you think I'm incorrect here, but that the whole Matthew 18 in there is, you know, you have private conversations and you try to do it privately as to not disrupt or create larger division in the church.
Yeah.
Whereas when it's already a public stated thing and it's not addressed publicly, it's already creating division in the church or misunderstanding or if you just went and had coffee with Joel Osteen and he's like, well, we're going to agree to disagree, you know, he's not going to take his books back. He's not going to.
Yeah. And I think the context of Matthew 18 is a local church too.
Mm-hmm.
You tell it to the church. The context is we are under the same elders, under the same authority, and we're brothers in the same local church expression. So how does that apply to someone in another country? And the other thing is, you know, if a certain author writes a book, they haven't sinned against me because I think their theology isn't right. So-and-so individual, random individual, writes a book, and I think he's right on these 4 points and he's wrong on these 3 points, and I write a critical review of his book and say these were right and this was wrong, and I try and correct him, and I would say, I think this, you know, and I'm arguing against him. He hasn't sinned against me. His theology is wrong, and I'm trying to, it's sort of like a public engagement.
A
Now, he may never have heard of me, so he's not going to respond to my response, but this is just the nature of scholarship and the nature of public debate and theology. Is you put forward your propositions and someone else will test them and critique them, and you can have public, you know, healthy dialogue, and you're teaching each other and teaching those who are reading it all, observing it all, how to think critically and carefully through these ideas. So it's not like if a certain theologian put something that's false and I believe is wrong. He hasn't sinned against me. He's just taught bad theology, and I'm going to call it into question.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, hopefully we're teaching, I hope to be teaching other people how to think about these things and to guide them through right and wrong theology.
Well, it reminds me of in David Platt's first book, Radical, I think the last story I brought up was from Radical Together, which was his follow-up book about living community.
David Platt fan.
I know. Well, I just what I'm reading right now. So it's contextual. It's contemporary. So, but in the first book, he's telling the story about being, like, he's a pastor of a megachurch. It was already a megachurch before he went to pastor there, right? But he's on... He's overseas. He doesn't, I don't believe there are real estates where he is, but some, I don't know if it's like a European or an Asian, but wherever he's meeting, it's like a house church, an underground, a church that knows oppression, that sacrifices a lot to even meet or gather or worship the Lord. And so he's meeting with these people, but whoever one of the women is there, gets some kind of like TV station, like in the few stations she gets, this one station from the States comes through, and a mega church from the States pastors there with prosperity gospel.
Yeah.
And she comes to this meeting of faithful followers, and she's so confused because she's like, are we not sacrificing or prioritizing the Lord enough because we're not experiencing that? And I'm like, that's the damage of someone not calling that out biblically. Because then you have believers who are really sacrificing everything and don't know if they have it right or wrong, because this confusing gospel is coming saying, oh, if you just do this, you're going to have riches, you're going to have prosperity and wealth. And
I believe the prosperity gospel is a false gospel. And it's leading millions of people into a lot of confusion and into a bondage around the world. I mean, I can't really state it strongly enough.
Idolatry.
Yeah. So for instance, North Africa, the Benny Hinn's the most watched Christian program. You know, when people think of Christianity, they think of Benny Hinn. This makes me angry. Because I mean, that's their understanding of Christian faith, and it's wrong. It's twisted. It's not the gospel. It's evil, and it takes poor people and teaches them: if you just have more faith, if you give to my ministry, God will make you rich. This is not Christianity. This is paganism. Mm-hmm. It's very akin to a witch doctor.
And if they're not rich, then they must be doing something wrong.
It's self-damning to the poor. Mm-hmm. It's their lack of faith is why they're poor. And if they give to Benny Hinn, God will bless them and make them rich. I mean, this is like a witch doctor. This is paganism. You do these sacrifices, you make this demand, you appease the gods, and they will bless you in response. This is the opposite of the gospel, and it's evil. I don't know how we got on the prosperity gospel. But
I don't even
anytime I can...
Oh, we're talking about calling out people.
Yeah.
You're talking about Joel Osteen.
Yeah.
That made me think about it.
Man with the ever-present smile.
You're
we
just
always
jealous of
we
his smile.
Yeah.
Just ding.
Yeah.
It's like toothpaste commercial.
Yeah, toothpaste commercial. I think it's like every podcast somehow ends up on the prosperity gospel.
We'll have to watch that. I was thinking that too. Like, well, we're back to prosperity gospel, but I mean, I guess because it's out there.
And it's
right?
Evil. Yeah.
And it's big. Well, there you go. Mm-hmm. So. Let's go from prosperity gospel back to the manger in the stable. It's like so not prosperity. Like, Jesus came and was born, and we just talked about the whole scenario of what that looked like. It doesn't even gel with the prosperity gospel. So there's some food for thought for all you podcast listeners. When we think of prosperity gospel, just go to the stable in the manger. So on that note, we hope that you have a great week reflecting on those things as we're in this season of doing so. And we hope that you join us next week before we take one more podcast before we take a two-week break.
Yeah.
And so we are going to have some fun next week, and we hope you'll join us. And actually, here is a thought. If you are listening to the podcast, will you please do me a favor and write in some of your best ofs of 2013? Share with us either your best movie you saw, best book you wrote,
best book you wrote.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
That's I wrote four books. My favorite one.
So the best book you read,
Okay.
You watched or directed and or acted in, I don't know, or whatever. Best
Academy Award you won.
Yeah, write it in. Or best cookies you made. Like, whatever. And then you should send the cookies to us so we can taste them and see if
best
they really are the best.
Best of 2013, yeah.
Best of 2013. But write them in, share some of them with us. That would be so fun if you did. I would
best
love
David
it.
Platt book you read, Rhoda.
Yeah. That would be such a toss-up, really, at this point. But, But anyway, best book you read, and I will say something other than the David Platt book next week.
Better get reading.
What? Did you just call? Okay, I might not eat a book a week like you. Okay, Steve, so I think we need to have a Matthew 18 moment here for my reading. Anyway.
You better turn off the podcast.
Then. Yeah, that's right.
I'm going to hit stop.
Anyway, bside at twosalliance.org. Thanks for joining us.
Have a great week.
Bye.